Welcome to Hot House, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Janine Mercer, and I am joined here by...
Mimi Steven. Hello, everyone.
How you doing, Mimi?
I'm doing good. How about you, Janine?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing better than I was last time, so... So I'll take it. Good. It's fine.
Good.
Let's see here. What did I have? Going on this week. So I've really been on a documentary kick. Mm-hmm. And I watched a documentary about the American Horror franchise and how it influences American life, and it pulls aspects of American life into the themes that they're presenting. So, like, for example, Reaganomics was about the same time that they released The Stuff. So it was all about consumerism and, yeah, The Stuff.
I don't know that.
Was like, no, it was like this, it was in a container, and it was like, buy The Stuff, because The Stuff is awesome, and da-da-da, and, like, everybody buys it, and there's, like, mind control, and, like, whatever. So it came about around the same time as Reaganomics.
Okay.
There was another one, let's see, Poltergeist. Poltergeist kind of played on white America's need to get out of the city and move to the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Because the suburbs are so much safer.
Right.
Well, they're not.
Right.
They're the same as the city, except it's the suburbs.
Right.
So, yeah, really interesting documentary. It's on YouTube, if you're interested in watching it. They also talk about the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise and the Friday the 13th franchise, and it's pretty interesting. It's a pretty interesting documentary.
I have a funny story about Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
So Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, those don't do any. I mean, yeah, they give you cheap thrills and whatever,
right,
but they never really scared me. I like more suspense and more whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
But the Nightmare on Elm Street, the only time I get really scared in that movie was the very first one, where Freddy is walking in an alleyway, and you see him with his arms outstretched.
Oh, really?
And they start growing and getting longer. That's what freaked me out. And to this day, that still freaks me out.
What?
I don't know why.
That was terrible.
The arms getting longer and floating like that. Ugh, gross, creepy.
I'm trying to remember. I think the one that, the part of the movie that freaked me out the most was the TV.
The TV.
When he comes out of the TV and he pulls the chick into the TV, welcome to primetime, bitch, and he smashes her face into the TV. That got me.
Did nothing for me.
But other than that,
just
no,
the
I
arms
don't.
Going.
Yeah,
ugh.
The floaty, the gangly arms, the Slender Man like arms. Yeah,
yeah.
No, it was. I mean, it was a decent franchise. I think it got a little hokey.
Yeah.
Later on down the line, but
well, the premise is kind of neat that something comes into your dreams.
Yeah.
Because we all have dreams.
I think the final installment, they actually present it like Freddy comes out of the dreams and is now like a physical being.
Is that the one where he's fighting Jason?
No, that's Freddy versus Jason.
Okay.
I don't know.
I didn't watch the last couple ones. I only watched the first two, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know what one it... I don't know what it's called. I remember watching the second one and having, like, it had all these homoerotic themes. So, like, it was this guy who was like, you know, don't leave me alone, dude. And they were, like, you know, in the same room together. And it was, like, very homoerotic. I don't know if they intended to do that, or it was just, you know.
It came about.
Yeah, it just, it happened, and it's like, okay, well, you know, I mean, it's, it wasn't a terrible movie, it was just kind of odd, because the one guy was, like, all super macho, and, like, whatever, mm-hmm. wasn't into it at all, and then the other guy was, like, wimpy, 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 you know, like, and, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, so, I watched that, and then, I watched a documentary about, Elisa Lam.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know, she's the Canadian student from, I believe, Vancouver, who visited the Cecil Hotel in, I think it was 2013. And she was found shortly after arriving there in the water tank on the roof. And there's a lot of speculation and, you know, whatever surrounding that. A lot of conspiracy theories, but really interesting. And they kind of, the documentary that I watched kind of presented it from the standpoint of this person passed away, mm-hmm. and that's what we're going to focus on, instead of this person passed away and we don't know why, and we think it's this, this, and this. So, like, it started out with, this is the person that died, mm-hmm. you know, this is how she grew up, this was her life, and then it went into, this is what we think the possibilities are.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of, it was kind of refreshing, actually, to see it that way, as opposed to just seeing all the sensationalism that surrounds it, because it is completely and totally sensationalized. It's just, it's yeah. ridiculous. There's one theory that, and I use that word lightly, theory, that says something like, she was playing the elevator game, and, like, you have to press the buttons on the elevator in a certain order, and if you do that, then you will end up in an alternate dimension.
I have never heard of that before.
Yeah, apparently it's popular in Korea. I don't know.
Interesting.
But yeah, so there was a lot of speculation involving that, and, you know, people were like, well, she was playing the elevator game. And there's something about it where you get to a certain floor and a woman appears in the elevator with you, and you're not supposed to talk to her or recognize her or do anything. You're just supposed to continue with the game. And then at the end of it, you wind up in an alternate dimension, and it's just, like, dark and empty except for this bright red cross in the distance. And that's it. Now, if you talk to her or do anything to this other woman that's in the elevator with you, then you will be trapped there and you'll never get out, basically.
Okay.
I'm sure that it is just urban legend, urban myth, you know, whatever. But when strange things happen, we strive to try to find a reasonable, you know, mm-hmm. conclusion. I mean, there's a lot of people who say, well, you know, she was murdered. She was the subject of some government agency's test for some sort of a strain of TB, because apparently the I think it's the strain of TB or the, I'm sorry, guys, I'm really foggy on this, and I watched it yesterday. Like, fuck me, seriously. It's called Lam Elisa. So her name was Elisa Lam, and it's like,
that's weird.
Well, what, you know, how is it that it's her name, like, her last right. name and her first name is this strain of TB or this whatever, you know, this program that they're running, whatever, and then she dies, and then all of a sudden on Skid Row, which is very close to the Cecil Hotel, a lot of the homeless population there come down with tuberculosis.
Oh.
So, I don't know. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. And I think that what That's we should do...
The first time I heard of that.
Yeah, there's new stuff coming out all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, literally all the time. Like, I don't know how many podcasts have done this story
mm-hmm.
and have pursued every avenue, and then after they hit publish, something else comes out. So it's like, it's really weird, and it's kind of crazy. So I feel like what we should do is we should dedicate, like, an entire episode to talking about this and kind of delving into it to try to figure out, try to see if we can figure out exactly, like, what we think happened. And then maybe you guys could, you know, write into us with, like, you know, comments. That'd be interesting to try to, you know, tie it all together. And then I thought, because Mimi's husband is a shrinky dink, that he could kind of come in and give his two cents, his expert opinion, on that whole situation, because Elisa Lam was actually bipolar.
Okay.
And she was on several different kinds of medication. I guess she was also depressed, and she was given, you know, antidepressant meds, but then they also, I guess, couple that with an antipsychotic. Okay. And so she wasn't taking one or the other. And they say that she had some sort of a manic episode, and that's why she did this. Now, I don't know, if you were going to commit suicide, would you take off all your clothes and throw them on the ground, and then...
Was she naked when she was found?
Pick them up, yeah, and then pick them up.
Oh, I thought she was fully clothed.
Pick them up off the ground, and then put your clothes in the water tank, and then jump in the water tank yourself. That was only, like, two-thirds full. And the tank is 8 feet high. Mm-hmm. So the lid is 20 pounds. So after she jumped in the water tank, how did she close the lid?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just weird. So, yeah, I really think that we should dedicate, like, an entire episode to just sitting down and talking about this, because there's a lot of paranormal phenomena. They say that the Black Dahlia was seen at the Cecil Hotel shortly before she died. Richard Ramirez spent time at the Cecil, which is now, I think, called the Stay on Main or something. So yeah, I mean, I think it'd be really interesting to kind of pick through it, you know, and see.
Yeah, I think
see
so
what we
too.
Come up with. Let's see, do I have anything else? I don't think so. Nope, I got nothing. So.
Alrighty.
What do you have going? How was your, you said you were doing your Banshee art.
Oh, yes. I am still burning the midnight oil. I'm getting tired. But, next week, somebody wants to come in and see work that she hasn't seen yet.
Oh, okay.
And I don't have much of that, so I'm working on getting stuff finished. Yeah. So,
how is your one piece working out? The one that kind of looked like a conch shell. It was a lady.
It's almost finished.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, guys. It looks like a lady lying on her side. And the curves and the swirls and stuff that are in there, it kind of looks like, to me anyway, it kind of looks like the inside of a conch shell with all those, like, rainbow, you know, that kind of effervescent quality. So it's very cool. Mimi's very talented.
Oh, so, thank you.
Yeah, and I totally want to try to procure a Mimi original when I go to one or the other of your shows or both of your shows or...
Sounds good.
Whatever. Somewhere. I'm going somewhere. It's going to happen. So let's see here. Anything else do we have? Oh, so I have not heard anything back from Brunder.
That's discouraging.
So on the coin flip, it was heads for Seven Bridges.
Okay.
So Seven Bridges of Grant Park. We'll do an episode about that. And we'll kind of delve into the information that you had before.
Yep.
And kind of flesh it out. And, yeah, and then we'll, you know, we'll go there and we'll do a little investigation and record it and, you know, I'll kind of listen to it and see if we pick anything up. I don't know if we will.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, should I be think pretty interesting. Be fun.
So.
Roaming the woods.
Uh-huh. And it's free.
Night.
Woohoo!
Free is always good.
Yeah, I like free. Anything free. Like I said before, on a previous episode, free chocolate is the only thing that's better than free anything else.
Yep.
So.
Free beef.
Free beef. Depends what barbecue stand it's coming from.
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef? What was that? That was a Wendy's commercial.
Yeah, that right? was a Wendy's commercial with an
Where's
ugly...
Where's the beef? What were they comparing it to? It was like... Was it McDonald's and...
Probably.
Wendy's?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was
a funny commercial. But yeah, it was like three old ladies, and they were looking at the buns and the tiny little patties. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's see here. What do we have this week? What do you have for
me? Well, I'm kind of going across the pond to England.
Oh, cool.
So, story about a palace over there.
Oh, a palace?
Okay. Palace.
All right. I have got The Mystery of Roanoke.
Fantastic.
The Lost Colony. Yeah. It's a very fascinating story.
Yes, it is.
I did a little bit of the background on the Roanoke Colony, and then I also talked a little bit about the Dare Stones. Mm-hmm. Because I find that concept to be very interesting. And another subject that is full of much, 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 much speculation.
Right.
You know, what's fact, what's fiction, we don't really know. I watched a documentary about it because I've been on this documentary kick.
Right.
And they basically, it was about these guys who went to where the Lost Colony was supposed to have been, and they found, like, all of these rocks piled up or whatever, and they tested the rocks, and they found similar elements within the rocks that they tested with one of the dare stones that they actually cut into, which I guess was a very harrowing experience for them because it's a dare stone, uh-huh. and it's the one that they thought was, like, one of the original or the original dare stone.
Okay.
So they cut an edge off and they did a test. And the elements that were present in that stone were also present in the stones that they found. Okay. So it was kind of interesting. The guys that were doing it were kind of, like, corny and hokey and dorky and whatever. I mean, it was a documentary. So, I mean, it's going to be kind of dorky and hokey and corny.
Right.
But it was really interesting to watch them go back to where the colony was and kind of try to figure out what happened.
I would like to do that.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. It's fascinating stuff.
Uh-huh.
And something that, until I actually watched the season of American Horror Story, My Roanoke Nightmare,
mm-hmm.
that I realized it was a thing.
Oh.
Because where I come from, we don't, that's American history.
Right.
So we don't learn American history, we learn Canadian history. And I was shitty enough at that. So, so adding the American history just would have fucked me up altogether. But yeah, we didn't learn anything about American history. So even the Underground Railroad,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing, we didn't really cover any of that.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't, okay. like, I think my senior year of high school, I took a Newfoundland history course. And that was one of the requirements. You had to take a history course your senior year of high school, and they had the Newfoundland history course. And I love Newfoundland, I love the folklore, I love the history, I know a lot about it. And I was like, well, if I want to pass history, probably a good idea to take the Newfoundland history.
Right.
So that's what I did. So I didn't even take Canadian history my last year of high school. And I didn't take it my second last year of high school. So, because you only need so many credits.
Right.
And, yeah, it was like when I came here and I saw that show, and that show came out a year ago?
Okay.
A year and a half ago?
Well, there have been a few documentaries mm-hmm. about Roanoke. So,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure I saw the one that you're talking about.
Because there was like this.
I don't remember that guy. They were able to cut into the stones.
Yeah, he had like gray hair up in a ponytail. Mm-hmm. He looked kind of scraggly and he had a goatee. Yeah. And
I don't think I saw the one that you did.
No. I don't know. But it was pretty mm-hmm. interesting to like watch them.
Well, it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, and they did some reenactments, you know, so yeah. I kind of got the gist of the story from that, and then I did some additional research and, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. So, because, you know me, love research.
Yeah.
Yay.
Well, I think it took the captain left, and he left his daughter and his son-in-law,
mm-hmm.
and then he didn't get back for 3 years.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's what I have. I think, I gotta adjust myself. I think that you went first last time.
Yeah, you're going.
Right? Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, I'm going. With a dismissive wave.
I want to hear this one.
Or you're excited about Ronan?
I really am. I love the story. I wish there was more.
It's pretty great. And, you know, I mean, it seems like whenever they come out with a new documentary, you know, it's like the Elisa Lam story, there's something else added, like tacked on.
Yeah.
And whether or not it's truth or whether or not it's half truth or whether or not it's complete fiction, we have very little way to figure out what is what because we weren't there and it was a long time ago. And so the mystery of Roanoke. Da da da. The Croatan are a small Native American group residing in the coastal areas of what is now North Carolina. Croatan Island, sometimes called Croatoan Island, is now known as Hatteras Island, and is located on the banks of the Staunton, it's pronounced Stanton, but it looks like Staunton, River. In 1587, the Croatan got some new neighbors. And they were English settlers, numbering somewhere between 115 to 120. The reports vary, depends on who you're reading. And the group was led by Governor John White. It sounds like he was just kind of elected to do that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like he was a governor.
Okay.
It was like, okay, you're going to be the governor, and you're going to go. White was to be the guiding hand and to aid in the development of the new colony. Sir Walter Raleigh had intended for the colony to be established in the Chesapeake Bay area, but the captain of the ship that they sailed upon dropped them on Roanoke Island instead, a site that had hosted a colony of settlers previously. The previous attempt had been a glorious failure. So already, they're not off to a great start. The new settlers began setting up shop, building structures, and working towards creating some sense of home in their new surroundings. Picture an even shittier version of Oregon Trail. But it wasn't long before the group began to run out of supplies. So White set sail for England to procure more stores for the settlers on August 27th of 1587. And he arrived in November of that year, just as England was about to go to war with Spain. Queen Elizabeth I ordered that all available ships should confront the Spanish Armada, preventing White from returning to Roanoke for a period of 3 years. Like you said, he was gone for three freaking years, which is a long damn time.
Right. When people don't have supplies.
Right. I mean, you know, now if he'd taken an airplane and he'd flown, you know, direct, maybe he would have gotten there. Jesus, what is wrong with people?
I don't know.
When White did return, he found that the colony had been abandoned and all of the settlers were missing. Although he searched endlessly for them, he found no clue as to their whereabouts, nor did he find any human remains to indicate that they had been killed. His daughter, Eleanor White Dare, son-in-law Ananias Dare, and granddaughter Virginia Dare had vanished. A single word was carved into a wooden post, the only clue as to where the settlers may have gone or to what had happened at Roanoke. That word was Croatoan. What happened to the settlers of the lost colony of Roanoke? Were they captured by local native tribes? Were they murdered by an aggressive tribe? Were they assimilated into a friendly native tribe? Were they taken as slaves to work in copper mines? It was speculated in Return to Roanoke, Search for the Lost Colony, the documentary that was from the History Channel from 2015, that this was the colonists' fate, that they were taken as slaves to work in the copper mines and to mine copper for the Native Americans so that it could be sold. And they actually found piles of stones that looked like they had been sorted through and the copper had been removed.
Okay.
So it's possible, you know, anything's possible. Were they murdered by Spaniards marching up from Florida or were they abducted? White was left to wonder and failed to find any settler alive or dead. So he basically lost his family at Roanoke. So as far as Virginia Dare goes, probably the most interesting part for me of the story was about the Dare Stones. Virginia Dare was the first child of English heritage to be born in the Americas. And she was named Virginia because she was the first born there, mm-hmm. in Virginia. Her father was Ananias Dare. Her mother was Eleanor White Dare, who was the daughter of Governor John White. Illustrated depictions of young Virginia's baptism into the Catholic faith at the Jonestown Exhibition in 1907 can be found online, but the child vanished soon after without a trace. And her life is a mystery that remains to this day. They have no idea where she went or what happened to her. In 1937, fast-forwarding a little bit, a California man driving through the coastal Carolina region found a 21-pound rock roughly 80 miles from Roanoke Island, engraved with strange markings. He delivered his find to the history department at Emory University. When university officials declined to pay for testing the stone, Hayward Pierce brought it to Brunel University and began tracing its origins and transcribing the writing on the stone. He put out a call for other stones, offering a reward, but was essentially buried in potentials, which I don't know why he thought that anything else would happen. And that only served to further muddy the mystery. There are a total of 48 stones supposedly describing the last days at the colony at Roanoke. So, according to the Native Heritage Project, the original stone reads as follows, and this is the only stone that has been given any sort of credibility at all. The other stones, it's speculated that they're just fakes. They've just been created. There's speculation that one of them was even created with a drill press. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, there's no credibility on any other stone besides this one. Ananias Dare and Virginia Dare went hence into heaven 1591. Any Englishman show John White, governor of Virginia. Father, soon after you went to England, we came here. Only misery and a war-torn year. About half are dead for 2 years or more from sickness. We are 24. Savage with a message of a ship was brought to us. In a small space of time, they became afraid of revenge by British and all ran away. We believe it was not you. Soon after the savages, fearing angry spirits, suddenly murdered all save seven. My child Ananias, too, were slain with much misery. Buried all 4 miles east of this river on a small hill. Names are written there on a rock. Put this there also. Savage, show this unto you, and hither we promise you will give great and plenty presents. Eleanor White Dare. So that's supposedly what the first original authentic stone says. The writing on the stone appears to be a message from Eleanor White Dare to her father, describing murders by savages. She spells it salvages. Mm-hmm. Save seven colonists and the locations of grave sites, along with where the group of surviving colonists might be found. Some scientists have speculated upon close examination that some of the stones appear to have been recently carved. Like I said, one of them looked like it was carved by a drill press.
Right.
A team of historians commissioned by the Smithsonian did assign some validity to the original stone. The team was led by Samuel Elliott Morrison of Harvard University. The preliminary report was released stating that the stone appeared to be valid, and the stones officially became known as the Dare Stones, this whole collection of stones. In 1941, the Saturday Evening Post all but reported that Pierce Jr. had crafted the stones himself, and there was talk of a libel action against the Post, but then World War II pretty much put the kibosh on that because, right. You know, there were more important things that they had to do.
Right.
And then at that point, the stones actually disappeared from campus view.
Oh.
In 1977, Leonard Nimoy narrated an episode of In Search Of, on which a Brno professor, Dr. Sutherland, claimed that he believed only the first stone was authentic. 10 years later, he amended his statement, asserting that even the original stone may only have a 50% chance of being real. Interest in the stones was once again revived as Jamestown, Virginia, celebrated its 400th anniversary as the first English colony to gain purchase on American soil. An internet scavenger hunt, among other scheduled events, caused Bruneau officials to receive dozens of phone calls, and this is because one of the items on the scavenger hunt list was a rubbing of the original Dare Stone, so they needed that to succeed, and so they got tons of calls. As far as the location of the stones now is concerned, it's been speculated that the stones are housed in an 18th century mausoleum on campus, but this couldn't be further from the truth. The Dare Stones are actually housed in a boiler room beneath the university amphitheater. And they range in size from 20 to 40 pounds each. One stone is on view at the Northeast Georgia History Center adjacent to campus. And two, including the original stone, are housed in the Special Collections section of the Trustee Library. In an interesting twist, part of the Eleanor Dare legend is that she gave birth to a child named Agnes, who was fathered by an American Indian king from either North Carolina or Georgia. Tribes in that area believed that the souls of the deceased were transferred into sacred stones.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting. Stories exist about the ghost of Agnes committing suicide by hanging herself in the theater at Bruneau University. It's generally a story of unrequited love. Agnes is also said to have been a pledge for Zeta Tau Alpha, who died in an initiation gone wrong. It's also said that she killed herself after being ousted from the sorority. Some claim that Agnes appeared in the 1930s, while others say that she's been around since 1960. She's said to haunt the theater, the dorms, the library. It seems as if it depends completely on who you talk to on campus, as stories of Agnes abound. So
how do they know her name?
I guess they know her name because there's been like some sort of psychic or something. That's been through there and said, oh yeah, her name is Agnes. I mean, it is interesting that, you know, there would have been a daughter named Agnes, and then all of a sudden the ghost is there. Some people speculate that she came on the scene when the stones arrived, but there have been reports of her since, you know, the 1930s. Some people say it was the 1960s, you know, whatever. But, I mean, it's just, you know, it just doesn't, nothing fits. It just doesn't fit. So, I don't know. So, my question to you guys out there is, have you ever seen the Dare Stones? Or, you know, were you part of that scavenger hunt that, you know, you had to get a rubbing of it? And if you did get a rubbing of it, you know, take a picture and send it to us. It would be very cool. And then, you know, what is the story with this Agnes? Is it just that? Is it a story? Or, you know, I mean, I remember when I started at Stritch, I had people tell me all of these stories about nuns and the ghosts of the nuns and stuff like that that lived in the dormitories. And it's like, yeah, but is that really like an actual thing? Or is that just a story? And, you know, is she the daughter of Eleanor? Or is she another spirit entirely? Just, you know, it'd be kind of interesting to kind of dig a little bit more and figure out what's going on there. But yeah, there's lots of people who have looked at the Dare Stones, lots of professionals and, you know, learned men and women who have said, you know, it's supposedly written, you know, the writing on the stone is supposedly done in Elizabethan English. I guess Elizabethan English had a tendency to misspell words, and they spelled words in the way that they sounded. And so it's entirely possible that one person would misspell a word one way and, you know, in one part of a document and then spell it a completely different way in another part of the document. And the thing with the Dare Stones is the misspellings in this supposed Elizabethan English are very concise. So it makes you wonder if somebody created them in order to just sensationalize the story. You know, it makes you wonder if they're actually real at all. Because it's very, the misspellings are very consistent. I definitely wonder about that. I find that very interesting. As somebody who, you know, is an editor and conquers a lot of spelling mistakes. But, yeah, so pretty interesting.
Very interesting.
I found it very interesting. Very informative as well.
Yeah.
For somebody who knew nothing about it. And then was like, oh, that's a thing? Okay, cool. Let's go. What do you have, Miss Mimi?
All right. Well, we're going to take a trip today.
Okay.
We're going across the pond to England. And we are going specifically to the Hampton Court Palace, which is located in the borough of Richmond upon Thames, mm-hmm. near London. So the palace originally belonged to Cardinal Wolsey way back in... Oh, I have it down here somewhere. But way back a long, long time ago. And King Henry VIII took it from him because Cardinal Wolsey lost favor with Henry. And so Henry decided he's going to make this his pleasure palace, as I put that in quote. And he made it into a huge monument to his magnificence. He expanded the kitchen so it could feed up to even more than 1,200 people at a sitting. He expanded the great, what do you call that? The great room where they all ate. Yeah, I can't think of the name. But he expanded it. Made it really big. And he also commissioned only the best craftsmen and the best tailors for his clothing because, you know, he was very much a peacock and wanted to strut his stuff.
Opulence.
Yes.
All about the opulence.
Yes. And he commissioned many, many tapestries made of fine silks and gold threads. Mm. So it was very opulent, was his castle. So going on to King Henry VIII, he married for the first time when he was 17 years old. He married his brother's widow, Catherine of Aragon. Mm-hmm. Now, history kind of shows their marriage as a really comfortable, nice marriage.
Right.
And he was married to her the longest for 24 years. She gave him 6 children, and all the kids except for one died. Mm. The daughter he had with her was Mary the First. He had no male heirs with Catherine, and he really wanted a male. So he tried to divorce her, and she didn't want a divorce, and then that's how they became Protestant and kicked the Catholics out.
Right.
And so he divorced / annulled his marriage with Catherine to marry Anne Boleyn.
Yep.
And Anne Boleyn was very young and very, she was looking for, to higher her station in life.
Yeah.
So they got married, and they had their first child, which was a girl, mm-hmm. which was Elizabeth the First. She then went on to get pregnant again, and she had a stillborn baby boy. I think she even had a few miscarriages during this time. And after about 3 years, Henry decides he wants to get rid of her.
Right.
So he trumped up these charges of treason and incest and infidelity.
Yep.
So she was taken to the Tower of London, and after 1,000 days, she was beheaded.
Yep. Have you ever seen The Tudors?
Yes. Well, actually, I saw the 1940s Anne of 1,000 Days.
Oh,
I didn't watch
The
Tudors.
Yeah, so. I thought that The Tudors was, it was a little much. In some ways. I think that they really, like, blew it up to the point where it was just insane. But, I mean, it was still pretty... Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. It was a cool series.
Okay, I never watched it.
I think it was, but, was it, I think it was either Showtime or HBO. Mm-hmm. I think it came on.
But, yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was good, like, well cast.
Oh, good.
They did a good job of that, but, yeah, anyway.
Well, maybe someday on Netflix it, but I don't know. So, okay. Oops. So, her head's chopped off in the Tower of London in 1536. So then, Henry married Jane Seymour, who was a lady-in-waiting to Anne Boleyn.
Not the chicky boo who was Dr. Quinn medicine woman who now creates those lame-ass necklaces that are super expensive. Yes, not her. Not that her. One.
No, a different Jane Seymour. Okay, so, but Jane, apparently they seem to really like each other and get along well, and she was pregnant, and she died just after her son Edward, Prince Edward, was born, which is very sad. So then he went on to marry Anne of Cleves. Apparently, they did not like each other. They did not get along well, and after 3 months, he annulled his marriage with her, but they sort of kind of stayed friends, sort of, and he gave her a pittance, you know, some money.
Didn't he give her, like, a castle or a house or something,
I think
too,
so.
So
and
she
a monthly,
could get the hell out of his...
Yeah, and a monthly
a
money.
Stipend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, after this failed marriage, he went on to marry Catherine Howard. And apparently he was actually in love with her. It wasn't that she just got his fancy. He actually was in love with her. So, however, she never told him that she had an affair with somebody before the marriage. And then she apparently had an affair during the marriage. And people would whisper in Henry's ear, you know, she's doing this. And he wouldn't believe it until finally... One day he found out about the affair before the marriage, and that upset him more than the one during the marriage, because he wasn't going to believe anyone. So, okay, so he decides to send her to the Tower of London.
Right.
And on her way there, her lover's heads were staked out on the London Bridge for all to see, including Catherine.
Yeah, my friend Dave actually told me about that when he came back from London on his his most recent trip to the lands, the Scotland and the England and the Ireland. Yeah, one of the stories that he brought back because he knew I'd appreciate it.
Were they still there when he was?
No, they weren't still. That would be gross. Although
kind of cool.
No, probably just wouldn't. It wouldn't be gross. Yeah, it would just be a skull. Yeah. Whatever.
Okay. So, 3 days after she arrives in the Tower of London, she's beheaded. Clunk, there goes her head.
That was quick.
Yeah. So, then, the last one he marries is Catherine Parr. And Catherine Parr was very young when she married him, but she was a really good stepmother to Henry's three children. Henry died 5 years after their marriage in 1547. After her marriage to Henry, she remarried, I forget who the name is, and she had a daughter. Catherine Parr died shortly after giving birth to her daughter. So, now, going to where the castle's haunted in the haunted stories. Catherine Howard, who was the one that he was in love with and who he sent to the Tower of London, she, as the guards were taking her away, she broke free from the guards. She runs down this long hallway to the chapel doors, and she believed that Henry was in the chapel. And she's screaming, and she's crying, and she's begging for Henry to forgive her. But he ignored her. However, people claimed to see a woman running down that hallway, and she stops where the chapel would be, screaming and wringing her hands and begging for mercy, and then she disappears. People have also claimed in that hallway to get very chilled. One person said that they felt that she got really chilled inside, like something had gone through her. And this one time, there was a woman who fainted right about where the chapel would have been.
Okay.
And then not too long, like just a couple hours after that, this happened on the same day, mm-hmm. another woman fainted right at the same spot.
Hmm.
And that happened in 1999. But for hundreds of years, people have claimed to hear strange noises, heard people running up and down stairs and no one's there.
Yep.
Smelling like odd stinky smells, like bad body odor and stuff. Because, you know, people didn't wash
that then. Right. It was like a yearly ritual, wasn't it, to wash yours?
And people saw, like, floating apparitions.
Yeah.
Then there's sightings of the Gray Lady. Now, the Gray Lady, the woman that they see in all gray, has been attributed to Catherine Howard, but it's also been attributed to another person. And apparently, the family that was living at the castle in 1829 was the Ponsonby family. And they kept hearing noises like a spinning wheel. And they couldn't find it, but they heard it in the walls. So they had somebody come in, and they started trying to figure out where it was. And then they knocked down one wall, and they found a walled-up small room that had a spinning wheel in it.
Oh.
Now, this happened at the same time that a church, which church is it? Of course, I don't have it right here. Oh, St. Mary's Church was doing a remodeling. And Prince Edward's nanny, or nursemaid, was buried there. She took care of all the kids for many, many years. And Elizabeth I got ill as a young teenager, like around 15 or something, with smallpox. And the nurse took care of her, and she contracted smallpox, and she died.
Oh.
And so she was buried at the St. Mary's Church, but during the remodel, her bones were dug up and scattered, and nobody knows where they were. But that's when her ghost was seen, and that's why, when the spinning wheel, they started hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
The nurse's name was Sybil Penn. So they believe that she could also be the Gray Lady.
Yep.
Let's see. So,
Well, I mean, there have been so many deaths there that...
Right.
I mean, it could be any female ghost that...
So, Anne Boleyn also, you know, she was killed at the Tower of London, but some people even attribute Anne as... More she's at the Tower of London yet. But they also think that maybe she's somewhere in the castle, too.
Right.
But people have been hearing horse and carriages in the courtyard, doors opening and closing. And actually, in 2003, there was a very heavy exit door that opened on its own, but got closed by a figure wearing period garb. But within the period garb, he was a very skeletal figure.
Oh.
So they actually caught him on tape.
Oh, they caught him on tape?
Yes, they caught him on tape in 2003.
Ooh, I got to look for that footage now.
Oh, yeah, it's cool. And it does look like a skeleton.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah, it's grainy, you know, but it's...
Still.
It's neat.
Huh.
So he's been seen by multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have seen the lady in gray in the king's chamber.
Mm-hmm.
There was 2 12-year-olds. And one 12-year-old was standing looking at something, and then the other 12-year-old took a picture of her. And there was nobody else around. But in the picture, there's a picture of a tall gray lady standing next to the 12-year-old.
Huh.
And there was nobody there.
Huh.
A 17-year-old girl... in 2015, she was the one who felt somebody going through her.
Oh, sure.
And the hallway, they now call the hallway the haunted hallway. They've called it that for like 100 years or so.
Right.
Because that's where most of the hauntings, if you will, mm-hmm. happen.
Yep.
Oh, one other weird blurb. I found it in only one article. In 1870, in the courtyards when they were, you know, fixing up and cleaning them up, right. they found two graves, and they have no idea where, who they are, where they're from, or anything about them. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. But
I want to go to an English castle.
Yeah, me too.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, I really want to go to Chillingham.
Chillingham?
Yeah. It's in England.
Ah.
Yeah.
Why do you want to go there specifically?
I used to watch the show. It was called Most Haunted Places, or no, Scariest Places on Earth.
Yeah.
And they would enlist people to go and spend the night, and they would wear, like, body cams and stuff.
Yeah.
And then they would just basically run around the whole night freaking out about probably nothing.
Right.
And then in the morning, and then in the morning, the creepy, you know, I don't know if he was English or Scottish.
Uh-huh.
But he would be like, so, you know, how did things go with Chillingham? They're like, oh, God, it was terrible. It was haunted. Blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, it was probably just like, I was down in a creepy hole and I felt creepy and started screaming. And then I ran out and that was it.
Okay.
But yeah, remember they had to each go into like a separate area alone and like investigate, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good show. But they did, that was one of the most popular episodes of Scariest Places on Earth was Chillingham Castle.
Yeah.
So every time I, you know, I'm in the mood for something creepy or I want to go visit Chillingham, I just go on YouTube and I type in Scariest Places on Earth and go there.
Yeah, you know? I always wanted to do that.
But yeah, the tour would be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Dracula's Castle.
I know. You can stay there. I
so want to go there.
Me too.
Yeah. No, at some point I need to make it to England because there is absolutely no excuse for me to not visit England.
Mm-hmm.
There's not. I mean, I have, you know, my family has some roots there, and also in France and Scotland and Ireland, but yeah, I mean, there's no excuse. I mean, we could go to Newfoundland on vacation one year and fly direct from Newfoundland to England and be there in a few hours.
Oh, nice.
And there's no excuse. There's absolutely no excuse.
I was in England for 8 days. Mm-hmm. I was traveling with my aunt.
Yep.
And We were an inch close to Stonehenge, but we never made it all the way there.
Oh.
And that was such a bummer.
Yeah.
I would like to see Stonehenge, and I would like to go to Scotland and Ireland, but no.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a relative, a five-great or a six-great grandfather that is buried in Inverness. In Scotland. So I need to make it there at some point to try to figure out if his stone is still there or if it's crumbled or.
So you have Scottish history, Scottish background.
Yes.
So does my husband.
Oh, really?
They're from Inch.
Oh.
Do you know where that is?
I have heard of it, but I'm not sure specifically where it is.
E-I-N-C-H. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of his ancestors came to Canada and built the railroad. I don't know what it's called.
Oh, the Canadian National Railroad, I think, CNR.
And he's buried at Sault Ste. Marie.
Oh.
So.
Yep.
Whatever happened to his wealth has disappeared.
Well, you know, that's kind of how it goes.
That side of the
family. Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Do we have anything to announce? Do you have a firm date yet on your
I do not have a firm show? Date. I'm meeting with the person next week, and hopefully we'll firm that up. She's willing to give me, you know, time to get more paintings finished, but I would like November, December, you know, just before Christmas is always a good time.
Well, especially if you to sell stuff. Things. if you want to make some money, do it around Christmas. And then put up signs everywhere. Makes a great Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Just print them off.
It's a Jewish holdom.
Right? Well, you know, you never know. I mean, often people in in homes like that. I mean, they have some money and they have mm-hmm. nothing else to spend it on.
Right.
So they're like, I'll buy Jim this painting for right. Christmas. Whatever, you know. Okay, well, it sounds like we're done for this week.
Good week.
Yeah, good week. Thank you, Mimi, for spending time with me again.
Thank you, Janine.
For hanging out.
Me. It's fun. It's always fun.
Even though this room is creepy and I'm kind of creepy.
I don't think it's creepy at all. I think it's really restful. And I love looking at all this stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I find it very interesting that you find it restful.
I do. I find it very restful.
With all the taxidermy and the...
Honestly, I could crawl on that little couch and go to sleep.
No, really?
Taxidermy doesn't bother me. I mean, you know, I don't like to see dead animals hung on walls. Well, but at the same time, they're really cute.
They are kind of cute. It's really interesting, actually, because a lot of the taxidermy that I found is actually, they have, like, kind of cute looks on their faces.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They look really relaxed. They're not, like, screaming or yelling or growling right. or doing, well, I don't know what you would taxidermy that would scream and yell. Probably just humans.
Yeah, I don't know if and that's a deer or a goat, but he's sort of, like, giggling.
That is a prong. They're indigenous to Wyoming.
Okay.
And that one is actually paler than the average prong. So, I don't know. He must have come to some untimely end on a freeway or something because his little tiny itty-bitty baby horns. I mean, he wasn't taxidermied because he had beautiful horns.
Yeah.
He was taxidermied because somebody needed to practice on something. Uh-huh. And they were like, yeah, so I'm pretty sure that that's a piece of practice taxidermy. He's missing half an ear.
Yeah, but he's got a funny little smirk on his face.
But he's got, he looks like he has a secret of some sort.
Uh-huh. Almost like he's ready for a cigarette.
Yeah, right? Like he got jiggy with it, and then somebody hit him with a car. And the look just stuck.
Yeah,
I haven't tried opening a can with the Siberian deer yet, but...
No.
I don't know. Might try it. Just once.
It's cute.
If you've never seen a Siberian deer, it's basically this small deer that has tusks that look like fangs. They kind of look like little furry vampires.
Mm-hmm. With big furry ears.
With big furry ears, like rabbit ears almost. But yeah, very cute. Mine looks pissed off.
Kind of a squink on him.
I'll have to... It looks like he's irritated. I mean, I would be irritated, too, if my head was severed from the rest of my body. I have a picture somewhere of me standing next to him, and I put a couple of pens up under my gums and took a picture, and the caption was like, who looks less enthused, the human, the animal without an ass, or the human who is an ass?
Oh, jeez.
So I'll have to share that one on the Twitter, because it's pretty funny. But yeah, all right, guys. Well, anyway, we're rambling now, so.
Yes.
That's it for us this week. Join us next week. We'll have more fun and creepy shit for you. Like we always do.
Mm-hmm. Peace out, everyone.
All right, take care, guys, and as always, stay spooky. Hey, guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more Hauntheads, check out our blog at WordPress. You can find it at hauntheads.wordpress.com. We'd also like to thank you for your iTunes reviews, because your reviews will help us improve, and we value them greatly. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Podknife, and Blueberry. And don't forget to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales. You send them our way, we'll read them on the show. It's awesome. So you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Keep listening, and stay spooky!